Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Tyson Garden. Tyson is an elementary assistant principal in the Chester County School District in Chester, South Carolina. He is passionate about making a positive impact on equity and excellence in our schools and encourages our students to make their own positive and lasting impact in our world. Welcome to the podcast, Tyson.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I'd have to narrow it down to one. I want to start with how I even got into leadership. I at some point in my career, I decided that I wanted to be an instructional leader. And you take the program and you think, okay, as soon as I finish, I'm going to get a job. And then this journey is going to get started right away. Well, little did you know, that, you know, it took me seven years to land the position that I have now. Just going through the trials and the tribulations of applying and not getting an interview, or getting an interview, but, you know, you're just not good enough for us. Just hearing that several times over the years and thinking, when's it going to be my turn? Mm-hmm. Who's going to take a chance on me? When will I be good enough for a school? Mm-hmm. And getting to the point to where, okay, I'm ready to give up. Mm-hmm. Year before last, about this point where I was like, I'm just ready to give up. I don't want to apply anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look anywhere. I'm done. I'm just done. Mm-hmm. But luckily, you know, I have a really good support system with my family, and they say, don't give up. And hearing other people in your professional learning network, don't give up. They may not be speaking to me, but mm-hmm. they're speaking to me.
Yeah.
And you know, they didn't know that I needed to hear that, but I heard it, and I said, okay, I'm gonna give it one more go. And I'm so glad I did, or I wouldn't be in the position where I am today. And I cherish what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And just that story alone, with the perseverance of your principal telling you, you know, hey, we don't think we see you as very instructional. If you don't know, my background is health and physical education. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I took that to heart as, mm-hmm. okay, this is advice that, okay, you don't think I know instruction. Okay, I'm going to prove it to you then. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the last two or three years where the ball really started rolling, mm-hmm. and people started to see me as somebody that knew instruction. Although I had the same expectations throughout my career as every other classroom teacher, my classroom was just different. Mm-hmm. And just trying to prove that, yes, I know instruction. Mm-hmm. It's just been a long journey. And now that I sit back, I wouldn't trade it. Because I think that journey has prepared me for the role that I'm in right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've talked in the pre-chat about, we have very similar stories about, you know,
yes.
finishing our licensure program and it just taking forever, right? And feeling like giving up, right? And getting a handful of interviews every couple of years.
Yes, exactly.
You're like, you know, when is it going to be my turn? And I think it's that, you know, when a door needs to open for you, the door will open. And, you know, maybe you just weren't meant to have that interview that you thought went so great. You know, maybe you weren't meant to have a position at that school. And then the school you're now at was where you were meant to be. And that opening didn't occur until last year, right?
And it's really funny you say that, mm-hmm. because I have I have several sisters. I have eight.
Wow.
And yes, all of them, I cherish all of them. All of them give me advice, but I speak to one in particular mm-hmm. about that when it's tough hearing, hey, this one's not meant to be. It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be. And mm-hmm. you don't really understand that until you get to where you are. Mm-hmm. That's when it really hit. Where I got to this school last year, and then I met those students and I met the staff. And I was like, this is where I was meant to be. Mm-hmm. I was placed here. I don't want to pretend that I'm so spiritual and deep, but it just kind of lined up mm-hmm. to where, okay, I did all of this long journey. I've learned so many things, and each stop was to prepare me for this position that I'm in. And I really truly believe that. And I took all the interviews hard, all the rejections were hard, but now that I can look back and go, you know what? This is why I wasn't there. This is why I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. At the time I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I didn't. I just wanted the position because I thought I was ready mm-hmm. and I thought I was the best candidate, regardless. I don't even know who the other candidates were, but you're always going to think you're the best.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always thought, okay, all right, now that I am where I am, now I know why I'm here. Mm-hmm. And I needed those experiences through those interviews and through the positions that I've held. Everything that I've done is for a reason. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's all coming together now that I understand that.
And it's so hard to see it when you're like in that trench of looking for that place, right? And putting out those applications and not knowing who the other candidates are and not knowing how many people apply to a certain position. So tell me a little bit about the context of your current job. You said that you are in a building that has three different schools, but there's an admin team for each particular school.
Yes, the complex, as we call it, mm-hmm. It is three different schools with three different focuses. Mm-hmm. My school is the School of the Arts, a lot of arts integration. So we have dance and music and, of course, art. Each mm-hmm. school has art, but it's a different beast, almost like a school of choice, if you will, mm-hmm. All three of them. The middle school, not the middle school, but the school in the middle is a technology focus. Mm-hmm. And the other school is an inquiry school, like a project-based learning. Mm-hmm. So each school is different, even though we're in the same building. Mm-hmm. We share some of the same hallways, and we each have our own administration. Now, do we do things together? Yes, because some of the decisions that we make affect the building, mm-hmm. but we are our own entity. So a child can't go to one school and just talk to the AP or the principal of any school and, mm-hmm. and deal with that. So we have our own students. We have our own teachers. Mm-hmm. But as an admin, we make decisions together that affect the building. Let's say, for example, how lunches are distributed, how dismissal. We share, this year in particular, for sure, we share some of the fine arts classes mm-hmm. because of the virtual academy and some of the teachers being pulled from the virtual academy. We've had to get creative in how we split those related arts classes. So there's a lot of things, you know, that we do together, but we are our own entities. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And so your current work as an AP, you said you handle a lot of discipline and, you know, you have some stories to talk about, you know, that you've, you know, one thing we discussed in the pre-chat was the fact that the principal licensure program and the internship that we do does not prepare us for what we
absolutely not. Right? Absolutely not. A licensure program, it kind of gives you a vague picture of what you're actually going to deal with. Even your internship, even when you're there for 2 or 3 months, somebody's there kind of to hold your hand, though.
Yeah, yeah.
when you get out in here, there's not really anybody to hold your hand. Now, I will say, except in my situation, it's different. Nobody's holding my hand, but having those other two admin in the building is so unique, and it's not a crutch, but it's definitely comforting to know, okay, I really just don't know. I can go ask so-and-so, and I just, you know, walk across the building and ask. And that's been, I can't tell you how great it makes me feel to know that, okay, if I really just don't know, I can just go ask somebody. But yeah, your internship doesn't prepare you for the decisions that you have to make. A lot of your decisions are human, and you have to use your judgment, and you have to use your common sense. And sometimes you really have to use your humanity. There's a book. We have a code of conduct. We have guidelines that says, if you do this, then you, this is this, this is that, this is that. But not everything's so black and white.
Yeah.
It's just not. When you're, especially in an elementary school, in a rural setting, to where there are lots of exceptions that you have to take into account. And you have to, you still have to be an administrator, but at the same time, you have to be a human and know that these are very small children. And sometimes they don't understand the brevity of their choices.
Yeah.
That is really trying to teach them something, but yes, you have to teach them consequences. That's what's really been tough about discipline this year.
Yeah. So you worked mostly in middle school as a teacher then. And so working at elementary school as an admin is a different experience.
It's such a different experience. For one, it's, okay, you got elementary teachers. Yes, we have some new teachers. We have some teachers that have been teaching 20, 25 years, you know, with a wealth of elementary experience. And it's, that was part of it that made me nervous going in, going, are they going to take me serious as a leader? I'm a secondary guy. I'm not an elementary person. You know, how can I take my strengths that I've learned, you know, in secondary and use it to lead these elementary teachers? That's very difficult. And I wouldn't say that I've mastered that at all, but, you know, learning in the process, some of it's watching what they do, learning from really good ones to help others that aren't as strong. Just taking bits and pieces. So a lot of it can be watching, and I can still learn, but I can still help. So that there's things that they can learn from me, and there's a ton that I can learn from them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that value of observation. You know, I try to get into classrooms 3 times a week, roughly. You know, sometimes it'll be 7, sometimes it'll be, you know, 3 or less, but, you know, and then the more you're in those teachers' classrooms, the more you become familiar with how they manage the class, their interactions with students, the activities that they do, right? And then also, if you have students who are kind of high flyer discipline students, you know how they act, you know, in like if you're elementary, you know, in their main teacher's class, but then they might be different in their performing arts or their art teacher's class, and, you know, PE, it's, you know, different. So that's, you know, kind of a good way of just being visible, right? I highly believe in being visible and, you know, greeting students when they come to school, when they get off the bus, and, you know, being there in the lunchroom and those type of things. And have you guys been virtual in the fall and then in the spring in person? How has that been with your kids?
We've actually been face-to-face all year since September. Now, they pushed our year back. So we were supposed to start August 17th, but, you know, some things in the state we shifted. So we moved back to September 8th, right after Labor Day.
Okay.
But we were in person. So we started hybrid with cohorts, but we still had the virtual academy. So mm-hmm. some students have been virtual all year because they're in the virtual academy. That is a choice in a lot of districts in South Carolina where they just have a virtual academy. These students are just virtual. They have virtual teachers. They don't come in the building unless we're doing some kind of testing where they have to come in, like a MAPS testing or so. But we started out with a cohort, B cohort. So the A cohort was Monday, Tuesday. The B cohort was Wednesday, Thursday. Friday, all our students were a virtual day. So what that would look like is the teachers would download something, or they would do a Microsoft Teams on a Friday, or they would just have a virtual assignment. It was up to the teacher what they would, how their Friday looked. So everybody was virtual Friday. Our teachers would come in the building, and I loved it because that gave us, you know, with elementary, it's go, 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 yeah. go. And that planning is, it goes by fast. It gave a little bit more time for our teachers to be able to plan for that next week on Fridays. We had PD, but you still had time for planning as well. So we ran that schedule all the way up to just last week was our spring, end of last week. Let's see, April 9th was our end of our spring break. So the week of April 12th was our, that was just last week, the week that just ended, was our first full week. So now we're back to 5 days all the way through, but we still have the virtual academy. So there aren't any more virtual days. So we're back to normal, if you would say. In January, if you let me back up, in January, we brought back K2 for the first 2 weeks for 4 days a week. And then Friday virtual, and 3-5 was still hybrid. 6-12 was still hybrid. So then 2 weeks after that, 3-5 went 4 days a week. So now we have all our students in the building 4 days a week. And we were doing that and doing that and doing that. And then our legislation had just passed to where we go 5 days a week in person. So that was our first full week last week. It wasn't too bad, but it was a little tough because there were people, of course, I didn't know we had to come to school today. of course it happened, but it was our first full day of instruction on a Friday. So we've been face to face all year. And for me, just personal, this is total, just personal me. I love face to face. I felt protected. I felt safe. I felt there were precautions put in place. I can't say I wasn't nervous. Yes, I was nervous like anybody else. How's this going to go? You know, what's going to happen? Is it just going to spread like wildfire? What, you know, I had that. I did. But I had to internalize that because, one, I'm a leader. And if the leader is terrified, then that's going to trickle down to, you know, to the teachers and to the students. But, you know, you internalize it and go, okay, what is best for children, our children, our children? I'm speaking for our population. High poverty area that people, our students didn't strive in virtual as a whole. The area has, the internet's okay at best. Some people don't have access. Some people can't afford it. So in person was what our community, our school community needed. We needed that option. There are students that can afford to be virtual, and that's fine. And those parents deserve to be, you know, to have that choice to protect their children the best way they see fit. But as a whole, our students would do better in the building. So I was glad that we could do that. And we kept it as safe as we could. There were masks provided for our teachers They had shields, they had masks. There was an abundance of masks and hand sanitizer, all the precautions put in place. And then around Thanksgiving-ish, around that time, they added the plexiglass to go around the desk. So the kids looked like they had cubicles. the protection was there. The intention to protect us was there. We just had to uphold our part. We had to wear our mask when we were not able to be 6 feet apart. Mm-hmm. We have to, you know, wash our hands as much as possible. So I felt protected. So I felt okay. This is what children need. I was fortunate, and I'm going to say this, I was fortunate to not have to teach virtually for very long. Mm-hmm. Just last year, you know, March to May. Yeah. And it was a struggle. Mm-hmm.
As a PE teacher.
especially. Even then I was teaching health, but it's still a struggle.
Yeah.
When students weren't used to it yet, and their science classes online and their ELA and their, you know, they've been on the computer all day. Yeah. And the last thing they want to see is me. talking about whatever. Yeah. That was, and I have to empathize with teachers this year for sure. And knowing that little taste that I had was tough enough, mm-hmm. them being able to persevere and some doing it all year.
Yeah.
My hat has to be off. It has to be. 'Cause I love instruction. I love in-person instruction. Mm-hmm. It's a different vibe. It's a different energy that you have when students are in the building. Mm-hmm. It's just different. When you even just delivering your message, delivering your content, it's so different. The engagement is different. Mm-hmm. It just is. So for me, I was glad that we had that in person, face to face, but we had the virtual academy for those that's just what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And I love our district for that, mm-hmm. having those options.
So has part of your job entailed observing teachers who also teach in the virtual academy?
Yes. We only had three virtual teachers, okay. but and one of our virtual teachers was a first year teacher. Mm-hmm. So the way it worked, I hope I don't get in trouble for spilling secrets here. But anyway, they were randomly selected because mm-hmm. that was kind of the best way to do it. I don't think anybody really wanted to I just want to do virtual. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that, but, a random selection. So anyway, this first year teacher is getting a classroom ready. Then it's like, hey, by the way, you're going to be virtual. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was or is. Because we're still going, but she was a rock star. And she was a little bit hard on herself, and I will say that, but just watching her classes and watching the intentionality to give the students some engagement. Mm-hmm. And we had a conversation about that. She was like, well, they didn't do this and they didn't do that. I was like, well, think about little Johnny and little Susie. They're laying in their bed. You know, that why they listen to you talk about math. Mm-hmm. How engaged do you really think they're going to be? You know, that's not really your fault. I mean, you are putting the effort, you're putting that there, but this is a tough environment and things are going to be hit or miss virtually. That's what I've learned with my little experience, just observing, having to observe our virtual teachers. You know, the student's learning environment, you kind of can tell what kind of student they are when you're looking, all right, this kid's laying in his bed, this kid's at a desk or is at a chair, like who's ready to be engaged?
Yeah.
That is tough. Are they going to show up? That was another thing. It's not like when you're face to face, you know, it's not like Johnny can go sit in the hallway mm-hmm. and ignore you. He has to be in that classroom. Mm-hmm. So virtual's tough. It's tough. It's a very tough environment. But when you're doing observations, and yes, they were required this year. I had a lot of grace, especially for virtual teachers. Knowing it's hard for me to say, you know, you didn't do that very well. I've never done that. I've never done that myself. But seeing what their intentions are is what I would go off of to go, okay, they're really trying. Because on the flip side, I've seen ones that did not really try at all. So you can see the difference. And instruction is instruction. And you can tell a teacher's passion just by watching or just by listening to how they're going to deliver their message.
Yeah, and I think like you mentioned,
this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
And that teacher who kind of beat themselves up, right? Am I doing well? Or, you know, getting the students engaged. And it's like, if the student's online, you don't have control over the, you know, if the kid's in bed or whatnot. And I know for my daughter, she's been mostly in person at the elementary level, but they did go remote between November and the beginning of second semester. And her school actually decided as a whole, they put out, like, these are the expectations from the school. Like, you have to be sitting, you know, at a table or desk. You can't be in bed. You can't have PJs on.
I'm going to keep my mouth shut about, you know, expectations for somebody at home. But
yeah, yeah,
I get it. You're trying. My own kids, can they do virtual? Yes. Do they like it? Not necessarily. It's not, it wouldn't be their choice. Mm-hmm. But the times they've had to, they'll do it. They're engaged. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to do it very long. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, you got 3 days of this. Okay. I can handle that.
Yeah.
But if I told them, like, the end of last year was really tough. Mm-hmm. After the first couple of weeks, it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
it was a chore. And it's not like I really want to fuss at them or could blame them. It's like, let's just knock it out. Let's get it done. Mm-hmm. So for my own, it's virtual is not the choice. Is mm-hmm. they would rather be face-to-face. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and luckily, you know, we've had elementary mostly in person, as I said, and they did some hybrid, and then the secondary's kind of been back and forth, but they're now 5 days a week in person after spring break for secondary as well. So, you know, and I kind of, this ties into the blog post that you wrote for Teach Better Team, Pandemic First Year Principal. So
yes.
Tell me about some insights that you gained, because, you know, you've had the experience of, you know, observing and leading mostly in the building, but you have had those observations of those virtual teachers, but then just starting your, you know, administrative career during the pandemic, right?
When yes.
You waited so long for the position, right? So tell me a little bit about like what you wrote in that.
Well, I started out just talking about how March 12th, 2020 mm-hmm. was my last day as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the time. March 13th, I go in on a work day, a Friday. And it's okay, it's kind of here, so we're going to get prepared to have some lessons, and then we'll talk about it on Monday. That's at like 9 o'clock in the morning. By 11 o'clock, we're back meeting together after working on these lessons for 2 weeks that we're prepping for. Mm-hmm. Now it's okay, you're going to get to come back Monday, and then we're definitely going to be out of the building. Things were changing so fast. And then by 3:30, it was, yeah, we're not going to be here Monday, and buckle up. You're not going to be here for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So you get home and then you start virtually, you know, and then it's like, okay, we're not going back. We're just not. They didn't say that, but mm-hmm. you could see the writing on the wall. So I'm sitting there throughout the summer, you know, a job comes open in another county, and I decided, it's like, okay, all right, I can apply for this. It's not, you know, it's not here where I am, mm-hmm. but I can't complain about not getting opportunities mm-hmm. if I'm not even trying to seek yeah. other opportunities. So I seek this opportunity, and long story short, I get it, and I still can't believe it. And I'm like, okay, cool, I'm excited. But then it's like, wait, now I'm terrified. What do I do? Yeah. It's like everything you learn in this program, I don't think I'm ready. Like, what do I do? This is a whole nother level. This is totally different. This is, these are little people. How am I gonna talk to them? Yes, I have my own little people, but they're mine. It's different. Mm-hmm. How am I going to engage these elementary students? What, you know, these things were swimming through my head. I'm thinking, I've never taught elementary school. How am I going to lead? What is this gonna look like? What's the school year gonna look like? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be virtual, or, you know, what's going to happen? Because things were still changing rapidly. Yeah. So I get the job, and it's around August 1st, something like that. And we're supposed to start school August 17th. I'm like, okay, 2 weeks, it's go time. These kids are going to be here in 2 weeks. But luckily, you know, about 3 or 4 days into it, it was like, nope, we're going to back up. We're going to start over in September. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, cool. I got a month now. Still not a ton of time, but it's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking the time, and I'm learning a little bit. I'm trying to learn stuff, getting stuff set up. Now, this is not in the article, but let me go back here to tell you how I got to where I got with the article. Our front office had resigned, so we didn't have a front office.
the whole front office staff.
Well, we had one lady in there at the time, and the principal's new, and I'm new, mm-hmm. and we're both first year. She's a first year principal. Uh-huh. I'm a first year AP. Uh-huh. She knows how to do my job, but she's still learning hers. You know, as running the building, and it's a new building, so it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know where everything is because there's nobody to show you. Mm-hmm. So we're learning this, and then we get somebody else in the office, and then one other office person quit. So now we're down to one person in the office, and then then like 2 or 3 weeks later, they were like, hey, I'm going to quit too. And I'm like, oh, so we didn't have a front office from the end of September to the 1st of October, you know, that about a month or so. Yeah. And we're still learning. And so we started a year behind, but you know, it made me think, okay, how, and there were so many losses in that month. Just, mm-hmm. I'm behind. I don't know the answers. I don't know what to tell you. Mm-hmm. But how can I be an effective leader not knowing all the answers? Because I'm not going to know. Yeah. I'm just not. So being, you know, having that communication was one thing. Talking to my teachers every single day. My principal and I have a non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. Every single day we start out greeting teachers and greeting students, mm-hmm. you know, whether it be in the hallway or in the classrooms. We're walking around, we're doing that. I adjust my schedule accordingly, but it's going to happen. I have to have that communication. Just like we talked about earlier, when I'm in the classroom, I know little Johnny or Susie's, I know their discipline problem because I've been in there, mm-hmm. and I know what they do because I'm in there every day. Mm-hmm. I know how that teacher style because I see some of it every single day. Mm-hmm. And that is my intention. I'm going to communicate with teachers every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't even have to be about education, just how are you doing? Or it could be whatever they want to engage in. Mm-hmm. I'm here for it. So that's one, communicating, definitely. Listening, mm-hmm. listening is, you know, hey, this is a problem. Or, hey, this worked or that didn't work. It's not always a gripe session. When you communicate and listen on a regular basis, it turns into a learning session. Mm-hmm. You learn about things and how they work. Sometimes teachers bring you solutions instead of just problems. They found out ways to solve it. Or, you know, if they're a veteran teacher, hey, this usually works for us, what we've done in the past, because I haven't been there. I don't know. So they can tell you the ins and outs. So communicating and listening are two big things that have helped me be successful so far. Having that empathy and support. Like I mentioned earlier about the virtual teachers. I didn't have to, I mean, it was an emergency situation, yes, for 2 months, but now you're expected to teach online as if you were in the building. Watching somebody do that, having that empathy, or our teachers in the building, they might be scared because, you know, we're in a pandemic. How's it going to go? You know, are the kids going to wear their mask? Just being able to be there for them and support them. These are things that you can do. Of course, having that flexibility, because things were changing rapidly, or, you know, now they stopped changing, but your class could be on quarantine. Mm-hmm. So now we have to turn around. We have to have a whole nother plan. Our lunch schedules changed 3 or 4 different times. Just all the things that usually go normal. You have to be flexible. You have to have some adaptability. And those are some of the skills that I kind of made it a guide to not just somebody in a pandemic, just a first year administrator period. You don't have to come in and change it all and burn it all down. You just have to take your strengths and utilize your strengths, and then the rest will come to you. It will. Overall successful. Now, do I have my learning, my bumps? I take my bumps. But take your strengths and maximize them. That's the biggest advice I can give to somebody in a first year principal role. Like I said earlier, I have that support system of other admin in a building, but not everybody's going to have that. So I couldn't write from that lens. I had to write from a lens of somebody that's going to have to, you know, navigate this themselves. Those are things that you can do without schooling. You know, your education program's not going to teach you that. These are things as a human that you must know, because this is a people business. You have to engage with people, whether it be the community, whether it be your students or your staff or your supervisor, anybody. This is a people business. So take those people skills and apply them to this leadership position, and you can make it work for yourself.
Yeah, I think that's so important to say that. And, you know, you have those strengths in the classroom, and, you know, you've taught a long time, you've done stuff a certain way, and you kind of react to things a certain way. But once you get in an administrative role, then, you know, some of those strengths that you have in the classroom go out the window, right? And you have to find new strengths.
Yes, that was the biggest thing for me. Okay, I was good at this, and this in the classroom. All right, well, that's not going to work here as admin. So what strengths can I take that I had and apply it? How can that apply? You know, I listened to my students. I empathize with them. You know, we communicated. I can take that and talk to adults and still talk to the students that we have there, because it's important to engage your students as an administrator. Not just in a discipline role. Because if they only see you as the guy that gets you in trouble, then they're never going to want to talk to you. They're not going to want to approach you. So you got to have that approachability. You got to be able to talk to them and listen to them as well. So that applies to anyone that you're going to come into contact with in your school community. Listening, communicating, the empathy, the flexibility, all of that's important.
And I think the administrators looked at it a lot differently than 30, 40 years ago, right? It used to be that child sitting outside the principal's office worried and, you know, that they were really in trouble. I mean, there's still students that get sent to an administrator, right, for discipline issues, but the approach I think most administrators have now is that approach of empathy, that listening to the child, finding out, you know, using trauma-informed practices. So we've changed so much throughout the years and just, you know, being in that people business, right? Instead of being in that punitive lens, right? There are yes. times where a consequence needs to be doled out, but, you know, finding ways to work with the situation. You talked a little bit in the pre-chat about, you know, you have one school psychologist that's split between several schools and, you know, she was able to then come to the building and observe a child. But a lot of the time it takes that extra support from a specialist, right? In some yes. discipline situations.
Yes. Yeah. We had talked about that briefly, but, you know, just without breaching confidentiality, as a person yeah. and as an educator, educators can look at certain students and go, that's not a discipline issue. That's something. It's, you know, they need special services.
Yeah.
But that's not my expertise. Mm-hmm. I just know they need it. And whatever issues that we're having with that student will be best for that student academically if we can get those services. And you see it, and they've done things to where, okay, if they had services, I wouldn't have to suspend them for the safety of the school and for the, you know, for the sake of the students, just some of their behaviors. And just as a person, that made me feel bad. It's like, I don't know what to do with you. I know you need to be here. I know you need to learn, but I don't know how to help you. Mm-hmm. And right now you're a danger to your classmates and your teacher. So as you know, you got to make that call and you talk to the parents and say, hey, this is why they have to be at home for this amount of time. And I explained, I said, I need for them to be home till I can come up with a plan. Now I can send them work home, or we can, you know, we've been creative with some of our discipline issues that we've had to do, because I know it's important. I know you did something. I know you made a bad choice. You still need to learn. I don't want an out of school suspension to be a vacation. So we've done creative things like we utilize Microsoft Teams because we have it. Okay, you're still going to go to class. You're just going to be at home. It's just safe for you right now and safe for everyone else with the choices that you made for you to learn from home for a couple of days. And sometimes that's tough, but it's the right call. But, you know, really, really, really talking to the school psychologist, okay, begging, all right, I how can we get this started? How can I get you into this building to observe so we can get the ball rolling at least? And we were able to do that right before spring break, and it was awesome, and she got to see some things. Fortunately for us, is some of those students were in the same class. So I took the most severe case, told her about that, and said, hey, they're in this classroom. And she saw the other two cases that I wanted her to see anyway. So, you know, it worked out. I didn't want to bombard her with four or five names. And I was like, this will work itself out if they all show up to school. So, you know, all right. So we got that. And then there was another student in another class. And so she was able to see all the issues that I wanted to address. And of course she's going to start with the most severe, but that was a small victory for me, being able to like, okay, we got the ball rolling to help these kids. We're on the right track, and it's not going to be 2 or 3 years down the road. You know, when they're behind, so, you know, academically, they're already behind their friends academically. We don't need to hold this process up anymore? Mm-hmm. How can we get this going? Because I don't want my go-to, and this is what I shared with her, I don't want my go-to is, all right, well, he's got to go home, or she's got to go home, or, you know, we don't have an in-school suspension. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you take the recess or they go home. I mean, and that's a tough spot to be in. And it's hard to get creative with how you're going to do your discipline. You know, you have your counselor there. Sometimes that works with that intervention, but we really need a solid plan. Like how can somebody without expertise help this child? Because that school psychologist can't live in that building. That's not her job. Mm-hmm. But how can you help me help them? Mm-hmm. Is one of the biggest things. You know, I'm a big equity person. So how can we level the playing field for this child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important to you know, that to point out. How can we level the playing field? Right? How can we, you know, bring in those experts? Hopefully after we come out of the pandemic, and even in the fall of 21, as we're, you know, thinking about hiring and funding for the different districts, that there will be more dollars spent on staffing, you know, the school psychologist roles, the autism behavior specialist roles, and, you know, those type of things, because we've known for years that that was lacking, right? And with all these extra ACEs that kids are coming to school with, after, especially if they've been mostly home this year, we don't know their home environment. Those older kids that often have the cameras shut off, right? So, you know, I just hope that we're able to, you really, really have those resources of mental health, and, you know, those mental health providers can then inform us who are those regular educators, right?
Yes.
That don't have that training in psychology, right? That we were able to work together with the parents and the special service providers and do what's best for kids, right? Because discipline isn't always the answer, or, you know, we need to look at those alternatives.
It's not even the issue. Yeah. Discipline's not even the issue. Mm-hmm. Like you said, these issues have been here. Mm-hmm. The trauma has been here.
Yeah.
The pandemic put it on Front Street.
Yeah.
All the inequities of education.
Yeah.
It put it out there. It's hard for me to advocate for, you know, a special ed student to be virtual.
Yeah.
I mean, now don't get me wrong. If you have one that is, and that's your choice, that's fine. It's not always the best choice for some kids, depending on their home environment. And this is where I'm torn, is the parents of those students deserve for their children to want to be safe as well. Mm-hmm. And if they think that's the safest choice for their child, by all means, please do it. But you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's just all the inequities are shown, like access to internet.
Yeah.
That has been a big barrier for, like I said, a lot of our students, that not being able to log in because, hey, I can't really afford it, but I want my child to be safe. We shouldn't have that problem in 2021.
No.
We should be able to really, okay, everybody's got it. I don't have the answer. I don't. But somehow, you know, being able to provide everyone access. Mm-hmm. If everyone has access, we eliminate those excuses to academic achievement. Mm-hmm. How can we give everyone the same opportunity? That's what's really is tough in education, and the pandemic is really, you know, it put a light on it. Mm-hmm. Saying, okay, so here's the gap of, you know, the opportunity gap, if you will, you know, the haves and the have nots. How do we shrink it? How do we close it?
Mm-hmm.
Is one thing that education, well, one of many things that education should focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Is not so much the academics. How can we create opportunities so we can get to the academic part?
Yeah. And I think, and I hope legislature and, you know, the powers that be, which is often state funding and federal funding, will see that. Because having been in education since the No Child Left Behind era myself, how many dollars have been spent on standardized testing and trying to get kids up to par academically when we really, you know, prior to the pandemic had been seeing for several years, okay, it's the trauma-informed, you know, the things that we need to find out. We need to peel back the layers, right? So, a lot of it is those dollars, right? The funding of those positions in schools, or sending children to outside providers, right? That's right. Also, you know, making sure that those are provided for with the state. So, in my work, I've also often, you know, referred parents to a provider. They have a provider at school, but they also have one that they see outside. But, you know, if they can't afford it, having, you know, those resources that they can go through, the paperwork they can fill out. But yeah, I just hope that'll become more the norm, I think, in the next 3 to 5 years. We don't want this wake up call to have us revert back to the old ways.
Yeah, to go back to what we're always been doing. And a frustration is, you know, they want you to be innovative and creative to take a standardized test. It's kind of hard to preach to teachers to be innovative and creative when really it's going to come down to being normalized or standardized. I think the allocation, it's not that education doesn't have money. How do we allocate it to what's best for our students? Like you said, there's billions and billions on testing. Can we shift some of that money somewhere else to where it's really going to benefit students? And I think sometimes that's what we forget that we're here for. This is who we're here for. We're here for students, not for adults. Not that the adults aren't important, but we're in this student business, and everything that we do needs to be geared towards that, doing what's best for students.
Well, we've had a great conversation today, and you know, there's been a lot of nuggets of wisdom that you've shared. Out of everything we've discussed, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I want to, the beginning of the podcast, I want you to, if you're going through something, remember my perseverance, remember the story. This is a very trying year. And this is a year that is for some, for several, I would say, that is making or breaking them. Don't forget why you're here. Persevere through, you know, whatever it is. It could be professionally, it could be personally. But remember the struggle. Persevere through that, and I can just say you'll be better for it than just to give up. Just from my story, you can just relate. You can relate my story to anything in life. Perseverance, sticking with it, having some faith, even though it gets shaky. Just know that persevere, keep trying, put your best foot forward. And the rest can take care of itself.
Yeah, those are so important words to remember. Where can people find you online?
Well, let's see. I'm a social media person. So at Twitter, at Tyson Garden, TYSONGARDIN. It's just my name. Same with Facebook and Instagram at TYG1979. I've also written some things for Teach Better, Teach Better team. You can search my name. Done a 3 blog posts now, so getting it there. So that's pretty much where you can find me right now. So look forward to connecting to anyone that wants to connect.
Well, I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. Well, it was great talking to you today, and have a great rest of your evening. Thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was such a great conversation. Thank you.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.